Gray wolves continue to expand their range in Oregon, even making appearances in California from time to time. It's not a smooth and steady process necessarily, because wolves were eradicated from the landscape decades ago through a deliberate process. Ranchers and rural homeowners did not want them around. The killing stopped, the recovery began, and here we are talking about wolves returning, and our two guests are involved with the process. Richard Thiel is a wildlife biologist, retired from the Department of Natural Resources in Wisconsin and in the Rogue Valley for an appearance we'll talk about in a moment. Dick Thiel, good to have you.
Thank you very much.
Becky Elgin's with us as well. She is from the area. She is a writer and a wolf advocate. Becky, good to see you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Richard, watching the West deal with wolves, I mean, how long ago did you make wolf recovery plans in Wisconsin, for example?
We're about 30 years ahead of folks out west here in Washington and Oregon, and we've gained a lot of experience in terms of how this process takes place. And so I'm here to talk a little bit about our experiences in Wisconsin.
I should mention that the event you're here to talk about is Embracing the Return of the Wolf. It's a case study and a discussion of the future for Oregon's wolves. This is hosted by KS Wild. That'll be at the Medford Library starting at 6 o'clock on Friday night, tomorrow night. So the process of bringing wolves back to any landscape clearly can get highly charged and highly emotional in a lot of quarters. What was it like in Wisconsin? So I imagine you were fairly early in the process there. So what kinds of things happened just to sort of get the public primed for what you were talking about doing?
Well, we started out in the mid-1970s following the passage of the Endangered Species Act, which is federal. The only state in the nation at that time that had wolves was our neighboring state of Minnesota. So the wolf recolonization in Wisconsin started at about that time. And, of course, the word wolf engenders all kinds of reactions from the public. So this animal has a lot of baggage with it just by word of that name.
The wolf at the door and so forth.
Yeah, all of that. And certainly the conflicts are almost immediate. Some of them perceived, some of them very real. So we have livestock, just like you do out west. Wisconsin is the dairy state, so you can imagine that. We have a very big, strong tradition of white-tailed deer hunting, and that's what wolves typically eat in the wild. And then there are also some perceptions of human safety, and largely not an issue, but still perceptions can be reality. So you're dealing with those three areas in terms of managing a return for wolves. You have to be aware of that, and you have to be dealing with that. So you have to have plans in effect to try and address those issues as they crop up.
Well, you can either choose to bring wolves in and place them in the landscape, as was done in the Intermountain West, or let them show up, as happened in Oregon. What was the choice in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, we're confronted with the same choices, you know, almost four decades ago. But it really was not a choice, because the wolves were in neighboring state of Minnesota, just as your wolves were in Idaho and Montana. And so the recolonization was natural. There wasn't any reintroduction, which means you're taking an animal from point A and putting it in a pickup truck or whatever and dragging it to another spot. Wolves are exceedingly capable of walking very, very long distances, and we know that from massive experience gained in studies in the upper Midwest. And so it's no surprise, for instance, for us in the upper Great Lakes, when we were watching from a distance the travails of OR7, for instance, mm-hmm. which can be kind of shocking to people if they're not, you know, aware of what wolves are capable of doing. But we regularly have wolves doing that kind of stuff. And so it's no surprise. And this is how wolves repopulate areas, and they can do it fairly quickly.
Did the use of radio collars come into its own during your career? I'm just wondering if it was as shocking to biologists as it was to the general public to find out how far wolves travel.
Well, actually, I was just behind the development of radio telemetry. I was, you know, maybe 10 years into the aspect of using that technology. So the technology that I used back in those days was primitive by today's standards, but it still allowed us to see those kinds of things. So we used them pretty much from the get-go. We still radio collar wolves in the upper Midwest, all three states, which is Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin.
Becky Elgin, I want to come to you and talk about your experiences with wolves. Evidently, you are from the Midwest yourself at some mm-hmm. point and got to know wolves there. Tell us about that experience.
Yes, I'm from Iowa originally. My father was director of a small zoo in Des Moines, and he, among other things, had a lot of animals that I helped work with, especially wolves. I raised a pair of wolves that were about 2.5 months old when we first acquired them at the zoo, and they hadn't been handled before, so they were very, very frightened animals. And I spent hours in the cage with them every day until they became acclimated to people. And ever since then, I've been very interested in wolves. I feel strongly they're an important element in our environment. And one of the things I do now is, as a freelance writer, I write articles about wolves. A book that I wrote that's focused for middle grade readers has recently been released.
And for middle grade readers, like we're talking late elementary school sort of thing?
Yeah, but it's really a book that I think all ages will enjoy and learn from. I've been told that as well.
I see it's called Journey. Is it specifically about OR7?
It is, yeah. The name Journey, yeah, very popular wolf. It's called Journey, the amazing story of OR7, the Oregon wolf that made history.
So your own feelings about wolves, the enthusiasm for them, I mean, have you run across people whose enthusiasm against them is matching?
Well, there's some polarization, definitely, and that's difficult. Dick and I were just talking about that. You know, it's ideal if people can come together and accept that there are going to be some issues. We can't negate that. Wolves can be problematic. They do occasionally kill livestock. But on the other hand, they're essential to our environment. They're a keystone predator. And we need to find ways to allow them to exist for all the good reasons that they're out there. And Oregonians want wolves. That's been proven over and over again. Several polls have shown that. They're welcome in our state by most people.
Becky Elgin and Dick Thiele here talking about wolves and their enthusiasm for wolves. Becky Elgin, our writer and wolf advocate, wolf biologist Richard Thiele, worked for many years at the Department of Natural Resources in Wisconsin. They'll both be in town for the Embracing of the Return of the Wolf, hosted by K.S. Wild at the Public Library in Medford, 6 to 9 on Friday night. You can join our conversation now on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Becky was talking about the importance of wolves in the ecosystem. Dick, can you lay that out for us? I know we've talked in the past to people about just how the landscape, for example, in Yellowstone looks different now that wolves are back in that landscape.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the key predators that was absent for about 60, 70 years, and ungulate populations there really exploded. And there's various reasons for that, not just the fact that wolves were missing, but with the advent of the return of wolves, that landscape has definitely changed because a top predator is back. So elk populations have certainly changed their behavior in terms of their use of forage. Has certainly changed, and so there's all these ramifications. And keep in mind that that's a wild ecosystem that really is not affected, you know, by human beings directly. So there are lots of things that are going on to study those changes right now, and we're certainly not at the end of our understanding of what those implications are. But in any event, we're looking at Yellowstone very closely as biologists because it's a really wonderful outdoor laboratory.
So we're working to understand wolves and wolf behavior, and it seems like at the same time, Becky Elgin, there's a certain amount of struggle trying to understand wolf protection in Oregon in particular. Is Oregon unique in having the east-west split about protection and no protection? And do you understand that well enough to talk about it yourself?
Yeah. The eastern one-third of the state has removed wolves completely from the Federal Endangered Species Act. And state removed wolves from their plan the end of 2015. So wolves throughout the state are protected only in the western two-thirds of the area, and that includes Jackson and Klamath counties where the wolves are down here.
Can I just add also that the state of Washington has essentially the same setup?
Mm-hmm. So wolves protected west side, not protected east side?
That is correct.
Uh-huh. And it's just because the numbers are that much greater, or there's more land for them on the east side? Or?
Well, no, it's political. And basically, it was attached to a rider bill back in about 2010, as I recall, with regards to Congress, essentially writing wolves off the Federal Endangered Species Act list in the states of Idaho and Montana and the eastern thirds of those two Pacific coastal states.
I have often wondered, and of course it's been a while since you went to school, now that you're retired, but I mean, do wildlife biologists get taught now that there's also going to be politics to deal with in addition to having to know about the animals they're trying to help?
I wish they were, because it would probably do them very, very well. And the wildlife schools that I'm affiliated with in Wisconsin and the other areas of the upper Midwest, unfortunately, don't spend enough time on that because there's so much that we have to know in wildlife and biology that it consumes all of a five-year, you know, program in school and then also in master's and PhD programs.
Is there relative harmony in Wisconsin now with wolves in the landscape? Do you still have issues with livestock predation and other things like that, that cause issues for people who support wolves?
No such thing as harmony when it comes to wolves. No, we have controversy. And, you know, as wolf population grew from zero to what we have right now is about 900 animals, over 200 packs, we certainly have our conflicts, especially with livestock. Perceptions of their impacts on white-tailed deer population. Our studies, which are ongoing on that, suggest that that's not the case, but perception, again, is reality. Every once in a while, we'll have an issue with habituated wolves, and that crosses the line with regards to public safety. And so, you know, we have to address those and do. So it's an ongoing thing, and it's not something that you can ever rid yourself of. It's just, this is what happens when you have wolves on the landscape.
Habituated meaning they've killed livestock before, they'll do so again.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, wolves, many packs, for instance, live in areas where there are livestock and never ever touch them, but there are some packs that do. So when they do, we have to be able to go in, do the investigation, determine what was the perpetrator, because there are black bears, there's dogs, there's coyotes, there are wolves, and there's diseases that actually kill cattle and then are scavenged on by other creatures.
Sure. So they die first.
So we have to determine what was the cause of death. If the cause of death is wolf, then in the state of Wisconsin, the farmer is issued an opportunity for compensation at the very least. And then we can either go in and do some aversive conditioning or non-lethal things. We have a number of things in our toolbox, such as they do out here. And then also, if it's not federally endangered at the time, then we can issue an edict to kill the offending animal or animals that are perpetrating these kinds of depredations.
Becky Elgin, you wanted to get in here, it looked like.
Well, I just was thinking about the recent depredations that occurred near Grizzly Peak,
okay,
just outside of
that.
Ashland, where a wolf came in. This was a wolf that dispersed from northeast Oregon and came down here. And someone did lose, I believe, two sheep to this wolf. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service personnel went out and put fladry, the red flags, out. And I believe turbo fladry, too, which includes, you know, where they're getting a little bit of a jolt. And that proved to be quite successful. From what I understand, that wolf did not come back to that area. There were no more cases of depredations.
We're just talking flapping sounds that essentially scare the wolves.
Yeah, they're really very timid animals. Flattery actually was used originally many, many, many years ago in Europe to capture wolves. They would make a ring of flattery and chase the wolves into it, and then the wolves were too frightened to go through the fence, and so the hunters would kill the wolves. Now it's used to keep wolves out.
Becky Elgin and Richard Thiel are here to talk about wolves. We'll take your phone calls and emails. Here is Dave in Mount Sexton. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Yourself?
Oh, hanging in there. I've been to Russia and hunted wolves on a thing called ringing wolves, and I understand the flaggery part of this. But I've also been to Montana and I lived in Idaho, and I know for a fact two government trappers that I personally knew that the feds came in and planted these wolves and then basically asked for permission. So I've seen depredation. I have friends that are sheep farmers. I don't know anybody here in Oregon that I've come across, except for Portland people and Eugene people, and I'm not trying to be demeaning, that go to the zoos that want these wolves. Everybody I've talked to that I go horseback riding in all over the country, in fact, Joseph and Enterprise, I haven't heard one person in the cattle industry, sheep industry, or just somebody who lives out in the woods that wants these things back. So I'd be interested in seeing the demographic work as far as finding out who these people are or what entity that they're with that would want these animals in this state. I think it's another, I'm going to quit rambling here real quick, but my government trapper friend was telling me that it's also a way that the federal government can also close off certain areas in time to hunters and people who want to go in and woodcut So, that's, you know, I've got a lot of concerns about this.
All right, let's address those. Thanks for the call, Dave. Appreciate that. Becky, you had mentioned polls showing that people do support wolves in Oregon. What are some of the breakdowns in there?
Well, the poll was pretty extensive. The most recent one came out just last month, and this included a pretty big group of people, including people in rural areas. And when he's talking about, you know, ranchers, I know there have been tons of problems in Northeast Oregon, but there are also some ranchers up there that are doing a lot with non-lethal measures to prevent problems. And from what I've been told down here by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the ranchers are quite cooperative. For example, the Yamsey Ranch, which has been there for many, many, many years, had a wolf on their property, especially last fall, OR-25, who came down from Northeast Oregon. And there was some concerns, and there was a cattle depredation. However, from what I've been told, this ranch seemed to accept it, and it's a cost of business, unfortunately. Cattle are lost in vast amounts to many other predators, to weather, disease. Wolves kill, and this is a USDA statistic, less than 0.2% of livestock. So wolves are a problem, and if you're the livestock producer that's losing wolves or whose cattle are stressed by wolves, it is certainly a problem. I don't want to negate that. However, wolves are part of the environment, and it's just going to be imperative that people learn to work with them. They're here to stay. They're not going to go away.
Dick Thiel, what about the portion of Dave's comment where he thought that wolves were used as a device to provide land set-asides? Have you heard of anything like that? I imagine you've heard the claim before.
Yes, and we have lots of federal land in Wisconsin. Most people wouldn't realize that because we're in the east, but we have lots of federal land in the state. And the only thing I can comment on is that some ambiguity with regards to the Federal Endangered Species Act, under which these animals enjoy some level of protection. But our experience, at least in Wisconsin, has been that, and we've had people that have made these claims, and we've actually had groups that have wanted to ride on the backs of wolves to push their agenda for protection of some other element in the wildlands. And that's not the intent of the Endangered Species Act, and that's just not how it works. And I've never seen anything, although I've heard the claims, I've never seen anything like that in Wisconsin or in Michigan or in Minnesota. And believe me, as a wolf biologist in that state, I certainly was approached by groups that wanted to push or promote their agenda, and I had to set the record straight as to the fact that wolves are merely on those landscapes. They receive protection as a population, but that doesn't extend to other avenues. And I would suspect that's probably the case here, but I can't comment because I don't work out here.
All right. Dick Thiel spent many years working for the Department of Natural Resources in the state of Wisconsin. He's a wolf biologist. Becky Elgin is a wolf advocate and a writer from the Rogue Valley. You can see Dick tomorrow night at the Medford Library, 6 to 9, in a program called Embracing the Return of the Wolf. That'll be, again, 6 to 9 at the Medford Library, sponsored by KS Wild. Dick Thiel and Becky Elgin, thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
A pleasure. Good to have you.